Welcome to I'm Obsessed With This, the Netflix podcast about the shows and films viewers cannot get enough of. Today I'm joined in the studio by chief critic at Vanity Fair and co-host of the amazing Little Gold Men podcast, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for coming in today.
I'm in the stream.
You are. You were just in LA, weren't you?
Yeah, talk about the stream. Yeah, I was there for the Oscars, which was obviously for our podcast, which talks a lot about award seasons, both Emmys and movie awards. Yeah, it was a big weekend for us, and it all went pretty well. I mean, especially with the big winner.
That's good. And you're best friends with Laura Dern and Renee Zellweger now, I hear.
Yeah. I mean, they've been sleeping in my apartment for a while because there's between homes. Mm-hmm. But I think now that they are Oscar winners,
So you're gonna see them next time you're in LA.
Yeah.
That's really nice. They're so sweet.
And one of them is going to get like a guest house, I think, and I'll just do that whole thing.
That's really nice. Today we're here to talk about all kinds of things. The Oscars, which we already started. Netflix original films, not Netflix original films. Maybe we might even talk about Kate Hudson.
I wonder if your listeners will know that that is a particular fascination of ours.
I wanted to start with kind of a high-level question. Mm-hmm. Because you watch movies for a living, partly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is one of the things. I was talking to someone today. There was a tweet. There was kind of an annoying tweet where someone was there was someone who was kind of making fun of their mother by posting a text with her saying, she doesn't even know what I do. And I was thinking, I don't even know what half of my friends do.
Yeah, fair enough.
Even if I know their job titles and where they work, I couldn't give you any sense of what their day-to-day is.
Everyone is Chandler Bing to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but with you, it's like, I can understand what your job is.
Yeah.
You watch things, you write criticism of those things, correct. You provide commentary on cultural things.
Uh-huh.
It's very understandable.
Good. So it's like, an old job.
You know, it's been around, it's a job as old as the media industry.
Or I think even they probably had critics in the, ancient Greek
just
play
screaming,
days.
Screaming in the plaza.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
You could have done that in your little robe.
You know that Oedipus Rex got second place its year at the Dionysian thing? But they don't know what won?
They don't know what won?
It's just lost
it's
history.
It's lost. It was in the library.
Right. Yeah.
So you watch movies for a living. You travel a lot. You watch things digitally. You watch things on DVDs. You watch things in theaters. You watch things with big audiences, small audiences, in an airplane, in your hotel room, on your bed, in your living room. This is not like a Netflix loaded question, like say Netflix. What is your ideal movie going experience? Like, where's your favorite place to watch a movie?
My favorite place to watch a movie.
Not TV shows, because I feel like that's very separate.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, and it's a very privileged answer, my favorite place to see a movie is at the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
Because the seats are comfortable, although they don't have air conditioning, you can't bring water in, so that is bad. But they just make such a grand sort of spectacle of the whole thing, and there's this beautiful, I think it's maybe on YouTube, but maybe someone recorded it, but before every movie, they don't do any advertisements like Sundance does or Toronto does. It's just the logo for the festival. But it's like there's a little presentation of it with this beautiful music, and the gold logo comes up and everyone claps, and you just feel like you're really about to see something very special, even if the movie that follows is not very good. But sometimes you see something like Carol, and it's like a very magical night.
Yeah.
But that is a rarefied answer. I think in truth, my actual favorite way to see a movie is in a mostly empty multiplex, especially the ones with the nice seats now, with like a big soda, which is I do a probably 85% diet ginger ale, 10% real ginger ale, 5% cherry ginger ale, and it's basically a diet Shirley Temple, and it's very good.
Is this a drink that you would only serve yourself like at one of those freestyle machines, or would you ask someone to make that for you?
I would never in a million years ask someone.
Because I used to work in a movie theater, and the biggest selling drink back when I worked in a movie theater in, 2002? Half diet, half Coke.
Okay, that's more reasonable.
Number one drink.
I'm 36, and I'd like my little sweet drink, please. Like, I don't think that would, I would be little, embarrassed.
You sound like Uncle Frank from Home Alone. No, right there. Okay. So what have you been watching lately, though?
I'm in kind of a nice rebuilding time because we're done with all the Oscar stuff. Mm-hmm. I never want to talk about certain of those movies ever again.
Mm-hmm. But what about Marriage Story, Richard? What about Marriage Story and the Two Popes?
Well, of course I want
to.
I mean, I'm talking about those every single day of my life.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah, for the rest of my life, that's just what I'm talking about. I just don't want to talk about, bad movies like Parasite and So I'm catching up on some smaller things that from earlier this year that I missed. I have to see a lot of like genre stuff to review. So like I'll go see, Fantasy Island or Sonic the Hedgehog or, silly things that are kind of out right now, which is a nice kind of brain cleanse.
Mm-hmm.
But in my spare time, I'm actually kind of catching up with TV, because what ends up happening between basically the fall film festivals at the end of August and early September till the Oscars, I just feel like I don't, which is, you know, almost 6 months. I feel like I don't have time to watch all these great shows that people are always talking about. So there's some stuff I want to catch up on. The new season of Homeland is starting, which I'm very excited about. So yeah, it's kind of like, this is my rebuilding time until the aforementioned Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah. Would you mind, I did this with another guest. If you don't want to do this, I can completely cut it. Do you mind if I look through your Netflix app?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm holding Richard's phone right now, and I just want to look through some of the things he's been watching recently, some of the categories he has. Because the thing about Netflix app is that everyone's looks different.
Yeah,
you know, like,
which
you know,
is
when you go, probably even like when you go in your boyfriend's account, and it's like
a horror show,
and it's like, yeah. But it's like, yeah. Where am I? Like, you look at someone else's, and it looks like a completely different landscape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
it's really interesting.
Because it's so unique.
His
to
is
yourself.
All like sci-fi shows and all these things that I never watched. Yeah,
and then I mean, aside from like, you know, everyone's being told to watch The Irishman, right? Or Marriage Story.
What is that?
But it's like, okay, so I'm seeing at the top Better Call Saul. Not once in my life have I been told to watch Better Call Saul by Netflix. Not once.
Really?
No.
Okay.
And I've never seen it. You know, Next in Fashion, I'm getting those as well. Recently added, mine look like that too. Top picks for you. Let's see if this is correct or not. Mm-hmm. Blade Runner, The Final Cut. Are you interested in this?
yeah, maybe a little bit. I think my guess is that it's kind of a prestige movie, and that's why they're showing it to me, but I don't know.
Okay. I Am a Killer? What is it seeing
that's
in
about
you?
That's about me. Yeah, that's, yeah.
Did you watch the original episodes of I Am a Killer?
No.
I couldn't do it.
No, that's I don't know what it is, and it sounds scary.
Okay.
I recently watched the Nature series about like Earth in the Dark or whatever, or Life in the Dark, where they have these really high-tech cameras that film animals at night, and like the Serengeti at night. That's a Netflix thing. I watched that recently.
Okay. Was that good?
Yeah, and it's narrated by Samira Wiley from Orange is New Black.
It's a good voice.
Keep it in the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Stranger, what is The Stranger? One season, when a stranger makes a shocking claim about his wife, a family man named Adam Price becomes entangled in a mystery as he desperately searches for answers.
Oh, that's probably because I was
Harlan
watching...
Harlan Coben.
I was watching You, maybe?
Okay.
Maybe.
Okay, yeah. So some serial killer stuff is happening up on
You? You was a recent catch-up for me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I watched the whole first season. I appreciated the craft of it. I think Penn Badgley's great. I thought she was great. I don't need to watch another episode of it. You know what I mean? Like, I get what it's about.
Yeah. Crime TV shows. That's your first big category.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense for you?
Yeah.
Is that track?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Riverdale is part of them, which is really funny to me. Dirty John.
Uh-huh, which I still have not watched yet.
The Sinner.
The Sinner, I watched the first season because of Beale, and then I haven't.
He did a bad thing.
Yeah.
He did a bad thing. So you're continue watching Steve Jobs. Are you rewatching Steve Jobs? What a movie.
You know, I'm so glad you said that.
You're about, you know, what looks like maybe an hour and five in.
Yeah,
to Steve
I put
Jobs.
That on to go to sleep recently, even though I love that movie. But I find it comforting because the writing is just so like Sorkin-y and just, you know, easy.
I loved
it. I think
movie.
It's a great movie. And people, that movie is interesting. I've never spoken to anybody who's like, man, it's fine. It's either that movie sucks or I love that movie.
Okay.
And I'm glad that we're both in the latter.
No, I loved it. I saw it not really, really caring. And it was a screening and I was like, it's free. Why not?
Yeah.
I loved it.
It's very weird that Danny Boyle made it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I feel like that's the one, like if maybe someone else had made it, I would have loved it even more.
It would have been a little crisper. Yeah, because the end gets a little... Mm-hmm. Little loosey-goosey, but yeah.
But even the end could have kept the exact same dialogue. Like, there's something
fully.
About the end that didn't have to change.
It's just the way he kind of choreographs the end of it that feels... They're really trying to... That's when they're like, please give us Oscars.
Give us
an
ending. Give us an Oscar ending. Give us an Oscar ending. One more category that I want to go through. Mm-hmm. Top picks for Richard. Let's see if Mr. Netflix, if Laura Dern's dear friend Ted is getting this correct.
Who I've met, by the way.
Is he a nice guy?
I met him and his daughter at an Irishman event, yes.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Grace and Frankie, top picks for Richard. Is that the
Right? That's you, I'm sure. That's you telling me to do that. Yeah.
I haven't watched the new season, and that's one of those shows that, like, I'm saving it, kind of. I love it so
Well, especially after Jane Fonda was so amazing presenting Best Picture to Parasite. I'm like, okay, now I got to support my girl and go watch that.
Yeah. I've just, you know, when people put on YouTube, like, whatever viral clip for 10 hours. Uh-huh. It's like 10 hours of so-and-so doing this when it's just, you repeat it. I would love to do Jane Fonda holds for 10 hours before saying Parasite. And the Oscar goes to,
and then it's 10 hours, and then she says it's the very end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I came back from our Oscar party, like full, like just soaked in champagne at 2:30 in the morning, and I watched her say that like four times before going to bed.
Parasite.
Parasite. Yeah, so good.
American Assassin.
Is that the one with Dylan O'Brien?
It's the one with Dylan O'Brien.
I saw that. I didn't end up reviewing it, but I did go to a press screening of it. I have a little crush on him.
It also really wants you to watch Booty Call.
Well, I mean, I wrote and directed it, so.
Which is pretty funny. Have you seen Booty Call?
No, I have a funny Booty Call story, though, okay. Having not seen it. So I had a roommate, one of my best friends from college. We moved to New York together, essentially. Anyway, for years, I would talk to her about the movie Boogie Nights and be like, it's so good, and she had never seen it. And I was like, she was like, that got Oscar nominations? I was like, yeah. And then when we were maybe 28, 29, she finally realized that the whole time, since 1997, that people had been saying what a good movie Boogie Nights was. Because it happened when she was like, you mean the one with Jamie Foxx? And I was like, what? No, he's not in Boogie Nights. And then finally I was like, do you mean Booty Call? For 13 years, she had been thinking that Boogie Nights was Booty
Call. Did she finally watch Boogie Nights? Had she seen Boogie Nights and thought it was something else? Did she think it was called something else?
I don't know about that. I think she had not seen either. And they just melded in her brain. And for years, she would be horrified, or not horrified, but just really surprised that people spoke about Booty Call. I mean, what she thought was Booty Call in such a, reverential way.
It's worth being horrified because Netflix wisely changed the cover art to just a photo of Jamie Foxx from the 90s because the Booty Call poster is iconically a booty in the two O's.
Yeah.
Which is sort of a triumph of graphic design in its way.
Yeah.
But it's also the sort of thing that maybe, especially if you were a woman, you would raise your eyebrows at and say, do I really want to watch this acclaimed film?
Yeah. Our friend Patrick designed that cut.
About the booty. That's good. Thank you. I hate doing that. I did that with someone else, and it feels like such an invasion of privacy to hold someone's phone, but also go through things that are specifically recommended to them. It's like I'm reading your horoscope or something.
You know what I tend to watch, I'm just seeing now, is I watch a lot of stand-up comedy.
Okay.
And comedians in cars getting coffee.
Is that sort of like a zen in your bed sort of thing?
End of the night, trying to go to bed. I've seen probably a solid half of most comedy specials on Netflix because I'm asleep by the
Where do you prop the thing? Do you prop it?
I have a laptop next to me in bed. But that's only when I'm sleeping alone.
Mm-hmm. And then otherwise, roll onto the laptop?
Oh, yeah.
It worries me to sleep with the laptop in bed.
I've broken my computer twice by kicking it out of bed or rolling on it my living situation is changing soon, so I think that that I'll have to come up with a new solution.
You can get one of those.
Yeah.
Get a tray or something and just sort of.
Because Andrew likes to watch something before, but it has to be something he's seen before. Mm-hmm. So it's not he can go to sleep and I'll be watching something that, so it's a complicated, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Changing gears really quickly. Mm-hmm. Let's gallop over to Horse Girl. You watched it, yesterday?
It was at Sundance, but I knew that it was going to be on Netflix pretty soon after the festival, so I didn't, I just decided to wait. I'm glad I did. I think the context of watching it kind of just in my weird little, home cocoon was better than getting in line for an hour. That builds up a lot of expectation, and I think Horse Girl, for as expansive as its kind of psychological portraiture is, is kind of a small movie. I mean, I don't mean that pejoratively at all. Although it is kind of centered with this incredible Alison Brie performance.
Yeah.
And I know it's based partly on her own experience. So.
Yeah, she is. I don't really know her career all that well. Mm-hmm. And to be frank, I kind of thought I didn't particularly care for her. But this was just so unexpected to me. I number one, didn't even think she was interested in doing dramatic roles like this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think she's one of those actors who got pigeonholed or went on the comedy track because of Community. Mm-hmm. But then, she was doing semi-dramatic work on Mad Men once in a while. She's quite good on that. And then Glow is sort of a mix of tone. But this is pretty much straight drama.
No.
And also kind of like I could see Natalie Portman of late playing that role. It's kind of fever drama, like mental, stuff. And I think she's quite good at it. And I always have found it thrilling. I'm not alone in this by any means. Of when a kind of more comedic actor takes on something serious. And I think, it's kind of a trite, maybe corny thing to say because a lot of people have said it, but the comedians have a better time doing drama because comedy is ultimately harder.
Yeah.
Whereas dramatic actors who try to then be funny on SNL or in a movie, it's doesn't always work.
Yeah. With Horse Girl, I found it interesting because when I was reading about Horse Girl before seeing it, and nothing, logline, stuff like that, just the consensus thing on Rotten Tomatoes, everyone is referring to it as darkly comic, a comedy, and I don't even think I would put that in the description. I wouldn't call this a comedy at all.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, especially because this movie was at Sundance and given that Alison Brie's in it and the director who has made comedies prior to, I believe he's married to Aubrey Plaza, so he has this kind of comedy.
They're just partners.
Partners. Very cosmopolitan of them. You know, I think that the Sundance thing, I think people were, they were like, okay, it's a quirky comedy. In the And then you start the movie and you're like, okay, is there, are they going for like a Mike White kind of like Todd Solondz-y, like just weird, awkward, lonely people kind of thing. But pretty quickly you're like, oh no, there's like a real mounting sense of dread here that's, I think, pretty well realized. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, I guess probably just saying like this is a straight drama about mental illness, potentially like schizophrenia. I think that's a much harder sell than
like it's not going to get, you know, like, you know, butts and seats whenever you present it like that.
I think even the title sounds a little snide, you know. I mean, it's the term refers to just those girls you knew in or boys too, probably, in grade school usually, who were just like upset everything was horses, you know. And so I don't know if it's maybe my what the title I would go with, I guess, but it I guess maybe it lures people in.
I was very moved by it, and not necessarily disturbed, but the sense of like what it feels like, not necessarily because I don't know that I can speak to the experience of going through that particular type of mental illness, but to be an observer of it was just felt so well realized. Like her roommate, kind of when you don't know what to do, like the Molly Shannon performance at the end, this will have spoilers, but like Molly Shannon is so caring towards her and this motherly figure in her life, but whenever it actually becomes sort of difficult, she was like, I kind of want nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And I think that was what was so painful to me, and sort of what I didn't, this is not the sort of a feeling that I expected from a movie called Horse Girl starring Alison Brie.
Directed by a comedy director. Yeah. No, totally. I think that it's interesting that the movie was at Sundance this year, because also at Sundance was a movie I know that you'll probably never watch called The Father with Anthony Hopkins.
I'll never
where
watch it.
Quite similarly, the movie attempts, I think successfully, again, having not lived through this experience, knock on wood, of a man who is suffering from Alzheimer's. And so the reality of the film keeps shifting, and you realize that like what we're seeing is their perspective and thus not entirely reliable. And I think that both of the films do that pretty effectively, while also showing what you're talking about, which is loved ones, whether be they family or, you know, friends, who are compassionate and caring, but at a certain point, it's like, well, there's a sort of toxic gravity to you, you know, if when people in that condition, unfortunately, obviously there are selfless, tireless people who just, you know, help no matter what, but. Yeah, both films are, you know, I walked out of The Father at Sundance and I was like, oh, that's a horror movie. And I think this kind of is a horror movie too.
I hate providing commentary like this when I can't think of an actual example of it.
Right.
But I feel like a lesser movie would have not necessarily wrapped it up in a nice little bow at the end, but sort of made it seem like things are going to be okay at least.
Yeah.
And this movie does not send you with that message at the end. Like, it's not, it's in no way optimistic about her future.
No, it's not a happy ending, but it's not, I mean, it's not nihilistic. I think that an important thing that I should have caveated this with, you know, by calling it a horror movie, is this is not a movie that I don't think stigmatizes mental illness.
No.
I don't think it is exploiting it or manipulative about it. I think it has fantastical elements to it, and maybe that might be to some who are suffering from mental illness, like that might maybe seem offensive. I don't know. I don't really know enough about that kind of language to really to say, but no, I think that it reaches an ending that's also in some senses a beginning, where, like you said, she is at least cognizant of her condition, and it's sort of like, okay, what's the next thing that happens? And it's never going to be a neat, tidy resolve, you know. And I appreciate that the movie doesn't, you know, do like 1 year later and she's you know, fine, you know.
And it's like she's like looking in the mirror, taking her medication, she's like, another day, everything's
and like,
okay.
And suddenly I See Us playing.
Yeah.
I promise I am not going to break your heart.
I promise not to break your heart.
But moving on to something else, something a little less dreary.
Mm.
You watched To All the Boys Too.
I did.
To All, To the Boys.
Yeah, Two Boys, To All.
Two Boys,
Love.
Two All. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. I have to be honest. I enjoyed the first one, but I think my enjoyment of it in no way matched the phenomenon that it was. I mean, people went really crazy. I don't know if I can swear on this. But I think people just went so apeshit for that movie in a way that I was like, okay, like it's sweet. It feels familiar.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, certain kind of differences.
I mean, like, you haven't been in high school in what, 4 years, 5 years?
It'll be four in June, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Which is crazy. I graduated from high school when I was 32.
Yeah, okay.
I can understand the Noah Centineo. I think Lana Condor is great. But it didn't latch on to me. But anyway, I saw this one because I wanted to review it for work because, again, it's such a phenomenon, this whole thing. And there's going to be a third movie they've already filmed, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I really liked this one. I thought it was what I really appreciated about it is because it's kind of the Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy, it can be a little darker in a way. Mm-hmm. And it's not dark. I mean, don't worry, people listening to this. It's not, you know, it's not Horse Girl. But it is... It's about kind of what happens after this happy coupling, you know, mm-hmm. like the movie begins and they're dating and she feels really insecure about his dating past and mm-hmm. his, you know, who he is at school. And then maybe another boy enters the picture. And I think it's just done very realistically about like what the psychology of a teenager who is kind of chasing a lot of wants at once that are some of which contradict each other while also still being everyone in the movie is a decent person. I really appreciate that as well. And it looks great. And Noah Centineo, you know, is cute, of course, and has that whole young Mark Ruffalo thing going on that's quite winning. but also the new boy, Jordan Fisher,
the new boy,
I believe,
yeah.
currently on Broadway in Dear Evan Hansen, he's great too. And you know when they set up like opposing love interests and yeah. one of them you're just like, well, obviously not that one.
Yeah.
This is not obvious.
There's always like a yeah. sleazy, like, the business mm-hmm. guy, the mm-hmm. sleazy guy, mm-hmm. and then the like the good-natured carpenter or whatever. Yeah.
Right. And uh-huh. like in this one, you're like, oh, no, I can definitely see they're distinct enough in that like, you know, she goes with Peter, it's one thing. If she goes with John Ambrose, it's another kind of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, life. It's another kind of semester of school, basically. Maybe the summer. But, like, both have their appeal. Anyway, so I thought it was nice, and it made me look forward to the third.
Do you feel like any sort of, I don't know, guilt or shame for being a 30-something who enjoys these YA movies? Or do you think there is, like, a universality in their appeal?
I think I used to, when I was in my 20s, a million years ago, I worked at Gawker, and I wrote something, I think when High School Musical 3 came out, mm-hmm. about like why I sort of was into like teen fiction. I ended up writing a young adult novel. At the time, I was just basically, I was like barely out of my teens. I was like, you know, 25 or something. Now that I'm 10 plus years older, I do feel a little bit weirder than I used to. Like I wrote about when I reviewed Love, Simon, and I was like, how to talk about this? I ended up mostly talking about grown-up gay people in watching that movie versus that movie itself. But I think it really depends on the movie. Mm-hmm. When it's something like this that's thoughtful and well-acted and has a sort of universal wisdom to it, great. When something, and no knock on another property, but when it's something like The Kissing Booth, I'm like, oh, this is fully fucking not for me. Like, I should not be watching this, in mm-hmm. fact, you know, because it's
and
like,
that's fine.
It's like horny teen movie, you know, in a yeah. way that I'm like, no, that's, that I'm past that, you yeah. know, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, there's a difference between the people who wrote The Kissing Booth and, like, Jenny Han, you know?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
that's a completely different, you know, creator.
Different intents, different, mm-hmm. you know, I would even say probably different audiences to some extent. But, you know, I think also with the whole Centineo of it, like, every once in a while, and it's especially with men, like, there becomes, like, one young male celebrity who is, like, okay for, like, 30-somethings to thirst after, mm-hmm. be it Timmy Chalamet or Noah Centineo. And so there's that kind of weird, like, one for the grown-ups in the room sort of quality to it, even though he's, what, 23 years old, yeah. so, yeah.
Yeah. But like you said, he looks like young Mark Ruffalo, so it, yeah. like, it gives us an excuse.
Yeah. There's almost a nostalgia to, like, back to, like, You Can Count on Me, like, 20 years ago. Which, mm-hmm. can you believe that, by the way?
I can't believe that. I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I really don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
That'd be a nice sequel, be You Can Still Count on Me. I'd like to see what they're up to 20 years later.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, seems like a very, like...
Are you listening, Kenny?
That seems yeah. like a very good, like, Lonergan experiment. Like, he yeah. probably has that in a drawer somewhere, like,
oh,
you
I
know.
Hope so. That'd be great.
But back to All the Boys, you were a fan of, like, John Hughes rom-coms.
Sure.
As a teen, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, devoured them. Yeah. No, my sister and I, we owned a VHS of Clueless.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say probably for an entire school year, watched at least a portion of that movie every day after school.
A portion.
Yeah. And then Dazed and Confused, which was both teen fun, but also, like, back in the 90s, because it was just 20 years ago, there was that whole 1970s fascination, the way there is now with the 90s for today's children, or now, I guess, the early 2000s. And the Hughes movies came a little bit later, I guess, because we just took us a second to get to them. But yeah, those were super great. And I like that there's a resurgence of that. You know, I think that it was interesting that in 2018, Love, Simon came out in the spring, and then in August, the first To All the Boys came out, just kind of solidifying that trend. And from what I understand, they've been incredibly popular, which mm-hmm. I think is fun. I think those movies become important sort of cultural touchstones for a whole generation. And so they need those things. I think it's good.
Can you still watch like a John Hughes movie and like all the way through and feel okay?
Oh, yeah. Like it's... Yeah, I think the one glaring thing, and Molly Ringwald actually wrote about this, I believe, in The New Yorker, is kind of reassessing some of the Hughes stuff now in a new era of mm-hmm. sort of broader social consciousness yeah. and all that. And, like, obviously the stuff with the Chinese character is bad. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say his name. And also the stuff that happens to the kind of, like, mean girl who, like, is maybe... sexually assaulted because she's
incapacitated. The Anthony Michael Hall stuff is...
Yeah, and you're just like, ugh. So that movie, which had been my favorite, kind of, I was like, well, I have to reassess that. Similar to the way that, like, have you watched 10 Things I Hate About You recently?
I haven't.
Okay, so that was, like, when that came out, my sister and I were like, this is, like, the thinking teens teen comedy.
Because
it had, like,
years.
References to literature and whatever. And we thought it was the coolest movie. Letters to Cleo playing on the roof at the end of that, mm-hmm. you know, that incredible school at the end of the movie. I rewatched it maybe 6 months ago, just out of, like, you know, I think it was on, you know, it was on a streaming service.
Bleep it out.
Yeah. oh God, it's like, it's a problem.
Really?
And specifically, which was an extra heartbreak for me, not the Heath Ledger character, although there is some there, but the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character is a total nice guy. At one point, he yells at Larissa Olenek for not wanting to kiss him, saying, I've been so nice to you.
Oh, no.
Or something along those lines. And I was like, ugh, like that. And just to think that I was so steeped in that sentiment as a teenager, I had no idea that that's what it was, and I do now. But
it makes me think about, like, there are certain movies, specifically because this is a movie aimed at younger audiences, I find myself, like, wondering about the future more so when I think about To All the Boys than I do when I think about, I don't know, Horse Girl.
Yeah.
Like, what is the audience of this movie going to think about when they're my age watching it? Like, are they going to look back on this fondly, like, as a time in their life when, like, oh, like, is this going to be a nostalgic, like, nice moment for them?
Yeah.
Or is this just kind of going to, like, go away to the wind and, like, we're going to forget that we ever saw it? But this seems like it is having, like, a real impact on the lives of teens.
I think so. I think The Kissing Booth might be like that. Oh, remember that movie?
Yeah.
But, like, I think that what happens with anything, you know, when you're that age, because you're still molten, you're still so forming, and these things imprint on you, like Scream did or Clueless did or Dazed and Confused or whatever I was really intensely absorbing at the time. And so 20 years from now, you remember the particulars of the movie, but it's more you remember who you were when you loved that movie for the first time, you know? And so it's more about your personal memory than it is the standalone thing. But I think these are good standalone movies, but I think that, yeah, they've become more sort of diffuse in the sort of experience of the world for teenagers, I think, than just discrete movies.
We're going to do a little rapid fire thing before we end. This won't take long. I was looking through a list of new films added to Netflix this month and wanted to get your opinion on them, but very quickly.
Sure.
So we're going to do a quick, like, what's the best movie of the month according to Richard Lawson?
Okay.
In sort of like a rapid fire, like, gut decision sort of thing. Like a bracket, but fast.
Okay.
Blade. I tried to pair them in things that made sense.
Sure. You seeded it.
I seeded it.
Yeah.
Blade Runner, The Final Cut, or Starship Troopers?
Starship Troopers.
Okay. Elizabeth or The Pianist?
That's tough. I'm going to say The Pianist.
Okay. Elizabeth, The Golden Age, or Anna Karenina?
Oh, I don't like either of those movies. I'm going to say Golden Age.
You're going to say Golden Age. Yeah. Okay. Good Time or The Police Academy movies? They're all coming to Netflix. And I know you're not you haven't seen Good Time.
I saw Good Time at Cannes.
Oh, I thought you didn't see Good Time.
No, I have seen it. I didn't love it, but okay. I loved Uncut Gems, their follow-up film, so I'm going to say Good Time.
Okay. Jerry Maguire or Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Ugh.
They just feel very 90s to
Prince
me,
of like, Thieves, like, I mean, talk about a movie that imprinted itself on me. That was a big one. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Maguire, I'm going to have to go Prince of Thieves.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Jerry Maguire a lot.
I get it.
Yep.
Purple Rain or Booty Call?
Purple Rain.
Okay.
Paul Thomas Anderson's Purple Rain.
Okay. Cookie's Fortune.
Oh, wow. Altman.
Or Driving Miss Daisy.
Forgotten Altman. I'm gonna go with the Altman, even though it's viewed as a lesser one. Isn't I think Liv Tyler's in it. My sister and I were kind of excited for that one when it came out.
I watched that.
My sister.
I watched Cookie's Fortune with my sister because we went to Blockbuster and we were like, oh, we want to see this.
Everyone was in it,
and I fell asleep halfway through, and I never fall asleep during movies. Yeah. By the Sea.
Oh wow, Angelina, that's the Jolie folly.
Or Dear John.
That's Nicholas Sparks.
Yes.
Oh, I'm kind of a principled opposition to both of those movies, but more to Nicholas Sparks, so I'm going to go with By the Sea.
Okay, great. Okay, so we're going to go through the thing. Starship Troopers or The Pianist?
Oh, Christ. I mean,
Stack is like watching you.
I want to say Starship Troopers because it's such a good satire of so many things that feel really relevant to today, but got to support Campion and say The Pianist.
No, The Pianist, not The Piano.
Oh, The Piano. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay, sorry. In that case, Starship Troopers and hold on. Rewind. Elizabeth wins that bracket.
Elizabeth?
Yeah.
So Elizabeth wins.
I was thinking The Piano.
So Elizabeth also wins against Starship Troopers.
No. Starship Troopers beats Elizabeth. Yes. Wow. God. The Pianist.
Okay.
That's with Adrian Brody.
Yes.
Directed by somebody.
Directed by somebody.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, the Golden Age, or Good Time?
Oh, you know what? Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, the Golden Age.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's the other one in that? It's like Clive Owen?
Everybody's in that. Every British man.
What a weird movie. That they were like, let's make a sequel to Elizabeth 100 years later.
And she was nominated for it, which is crazy.
And that's like the main thing that it got.
That's it.
The nomination.
It was just like it's like when Meryl Streep gets nominated for like Music of the Heart. It's like, here you go, fine.
Okay. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, or Purple Rain?
Robin Hood.
Okay.
I know that's sacrilegious, but...
No, that's fine. That's fine. You said By the Sea or Cookie's Fortune?
Let's say Cookie's Fortune.
Okay. Well, now let's go backwards.
Uh-huh.
Only a few more rounds.
Yeah.
Starship Troopers or Elizabeth the Golden
Starship
Age.
Troopers. I think I know it's going to win.
Robin Hood or Cookie's Fortune?
Robin Hood.
Okay, and then finally, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, or Starship Troopers?
Casper Van Dien versus Kevin Costner.
Yes,
I'm gonna go with Casper Van Dien, but not for that, not because of him.
Kevin could never win against Casper Van Dien in 1997.
Yeah, he couldn't. He really couldn't. Kevin couldn't win against Dina Meyer, who plays, I believe her name is Izzy, who was the kind of like cool girl
who
unfortunately doesn't make it to the end of
the movie. Iconic shower scene in Starship Troopers that was for. Certain adolescents in the 90s, formative for all kinds of types of people.
Yeah, I went to see that movie.
Like, did you see?
That was 97?
97.
14th birthday party. All boys. And a parent. I think you can imagine.
And everyone was like,
That sort of, like, there was an immediate, like, of like just the room just sort of oxygen left it and I you know yeah and
all eyes on all eye, all eyes but one pair on Denise Richards.
Yeah, I checked my phone.
Okay, that's fine. So the best movie on Netflix in February of 2020 is Starship Troopers.
I feel totally fine with that.
That's
I believe
okay
it's the when I was growing up reading Entertainment Weekly reviews, it's the only review I read in that magazine where I think it was Owen Gleiberman reviewed it, did not give it a grade at the end because he was like, if this is earnest, it's terrible. If it's satire, it's brilliant.
It's
and I just
brilliant.
Don't know what it is. And I think it's satire.
But I think, especially now that it's on a platform that where people can, you know, view it more widely, this is what happens to things. Like, they need this sort of period where people can re-examine them. Like, enough time has passed where people are going to re-examine Starship Troopers, like, en masse.
Yeah.
And say, like, actually, it was pretty good.
I mean, the guy
That's already
who,
started happening.
The guy who made L is not making Starship Troopers earnestly.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? So.
And I mean, and what's also crazy about that is that he had made RoboCop just fairly recently.
And
like,
we
know what to expect from him.
Yeah.
Okay, Richard, thank you for having this conversation about all sorts of things with me. It was so much fun. You can read Richard's writing on Vanity Fair on his Twitter account at Rylaws. You can listen to Little Gold Men wherever you get your podcasts and his upcoming Still Watching podcasts about Watchmen and perhaps something else.
Westworld and Mrs. America.
Okay, and Mrs. America. Actually, that'll be great. Well, thank you for being here, Richard.
I'm sorry, Jane Campion, that I confused you with a certain other director.
Oh, she'd love that, though.
She'd find it funny from her storage container in the rural New Zealand where she lives.
With her straight gray hair.
She just always makes actors look like her in movies.
I know, it's
great.
Wonderful.
Perfect.
That's the best thing she does. Thank you, Richard. Bye.
Bye.